You're listening to the Vocal Fry Podcast, your weekly dash of voice science, pedagogy, and pop culture. Coming to you from your semi-occluded vocal tract, have you practiced today?
All right, Vocal Fam,
we
are back for 2 weeks in a row. Gosh, it's been a tough year to get
Wild.
2 weeks in a row. Or is this 3 weeks in a row? Did we do three
this
in a row?
This might be three
no,
in a row.
I don't think
yeah,
that's
no, because
right.
we talked about your higher eds. No?
Is it? Oh, wow, 3 weeks in a row.
I know, we're really going crazy here.
Sarah, oh my gosh. Well, we have two lovely guests
yes.
with us today, and I'm going to let them each introduce themselves. But Martha, Erica, welcome to Vocal Fry.
Ah, good morning.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Since they're new Vocal Fam and have never been on the show, both first-timers, we're going to do a whole thing about art song today. And forgive us, Vocal Fam, you know that my sort of focus has not been art song, and so we've not done a lot of these on the podcast.
I know, but I'm excited.
I spend too much time singing musical theater and opera. But anyway, we're excited. This is our second one this season, and it's really a nice companion to mm-hmm. Laura Strickling's episode back in the fall. So we're excited about today, going to hear lots of stuff and looking forward to this because, you know, look, for those of us who still are, you know, singing classical music, there's a whole lot of new classical music that still gets written every day, folks. I don't know if you knew that.
Shocking.
That's right, Sarah. Not Beyonce. Beyonce is not the only artist releasing new music, as it turns out. But that's not to knock Beyonce. At all.
You should not.
I wasn't. Anyway, all right, so I'm going to start with you, Martha. Martha Guth, please tell us a little bit about yourself so we know who we're talking to.
Yeah, thanks. So a little bit of, I teach at Ithaca College. I happen to teach a lot of music theater students, a lot of students interested in genres other than, my heart is most definitely in classical music and most specifically in art song. When I perform, it's mostly these days recital and concert work, so solo gigs with symphonies. I would say the last sort of 10 to 15 years, I've dedicated a huge part of my soul and heart to this partnership with Erica and our nonprofit that's called Sparks and Wiry Cries. And she has just been an incredibly passionate musical soulmate, I guess I might say, in terms of the work that we're doing together.
That's fabulous.
Before we go on to Erica, Martha and I were fellow apprentice artists in Santa Fe 1 or 2 years ago. That's what we'll say, right?
It was totally just the other day.
Yeah, just
for
the
sure,
other day.
Sure.
So anyway. All right. And Erica, please tell us about yourself.
Sure. My name is Erica Switzer. I'm a pianist. I am on the faculty now at Bard College and its Conservatory of Music. I'm the director of the Collaborative Piano Fellowship Program, and I'm also a vocal coach and piano teacher and diction teacher and repertoire class teacher. And oh my goodness, I do so many things here at Bard, but it all connects to that same passion that links Martha and I, which is, you know, storytelling and how we do that with our instruments and how we do that with sound and words and our imaginations. And that's kind of my thing. And I'm thinking that Martha and I met probably around the same time that you guys met, because she moved to Germany right in the midst of that Santa Fe era. And
oh, wow.
So that's as we go back to that time, and we were studying in the same town, and we were started working together and started doing competitions together. We had some fabulous adventures. South Africa was definitely a standout adventure together. We were in Pretoria and Martha got to hang out with a giraffe and Grace Bunbury got to see me change multiple times in the dressing room. And, we go back, we have lots of stories, but it's good to be here today to think about all the work we've done since then.
So, you know, just before we get into Sparks and Wirecry specifically, from either of you, from pianist and singer, you know, addressing students, like thinking of talking to young, our young listeners maybe, how does one end up sort of crafting out a career towards song and recitaling and this kind of thing? Like, can you tell us each a little bit about that journey specifically and like kind of how that, you know, comes up? Because I think too often in academia particularly, we either talk about with our singers about trying to break into the musical theater industry or the opera industry, you know, and so many of our training programs are so heavily kind of geared toward that. But tell us a little bit about either of your journeys toward this place.
I think part of it is like not being totally okay with being poor for a long time. And also, actually, realistically speaking, I think we all probably came up at a time when it became almost fundamental that you had to diversify your interests and your abilities.
Yeah. Mm.
And so understanding that the sort of what had been okay and possible for the previous generation was just not going to be possible for us. And I know for a fact is even less so.
I was going to say, sure. I think it's changed for our students now.
Oh yeah, for sure. So it's, it came from, wanting to be involved, stay involved, to work with these musicians that we admire and adore so much, to kind of try and lift up the genre as a whole. But also to just be a part of the fabric, the conversation. And so that meant, okay, trying to sharpen writing skills, you know, for grants or whatever that is, to understand structures and how they are built in terms of nonprofit organizations or commercial organizations and what the differences are and why each are important, if they both are important. I think that's a question. and then also not letting go of your own performance aspirations and desires and trying to be really smart about facilitating both your own career and those of the people that you would admire and want to work with.
Yeah.
Erica, do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that Martha has said. It's effort in a lot of different directions at the same time. I mean, I feel like this field of art song, it chose me as much as I chose it. Mm. It was what spoke to my own passion. It was what made me want to keep practicing the piano. It was what made me want to be in a room with other people. and so that, you know, it was a mutually beneficial situation. And the times that personally that, you know, that I reached out in other directions, like applied to young artist programs for like opera training, you know, the pianist, mm-hmm. Those doors just didn't open to me, you know, but I won all the song competitions. So like, it was a good fit, you know, and it was what excited me. So I think following your passions is just always the right thing to do. And you don't know ever how far it will take you, but if you're in it because you love it, then I think that that's like a kind of magnetism forward. So, I feel very, very fortunate to have found, as you know, as Martha said, a balance of tasks that make this possible. Because I think living as a recitalist alone is a very, I mean, some people do it, of course, but mm-hmm. but very, very few. And it's a tough life. I mean, you're on the road all the time. And I had always wanted to teach and to play, and then also to, you know, make a difference and move things forward. You know, I think the inspiration all along was our time in Germany and feeling, you know, I went there because I wanted to feel connected to the history of the music that I was so in love with, which at the time was certainly Schubert and Schumann and Brahms and Beethoven and whatnot. And I thought, well, if I live there, then I'll really immerse myself. And I did, and it was fantastic. At the same time as I felt immersed and embraced by it, I also realized the distance between that culture and that time in music history and now and who I am and where I was born. And so Sparks is very much an expression of of trying to bring those things together, you know, trying to bring the power of storytelling when it's reduced into really elegant poetry and then told through music, like to be able to do that in the current moment, because that is what Schubert was doing, you know, the poems he chose were response to the political times, and poetry now is no different. And so to be able to engage in that means, you know, today is I think it just makes me feel connected.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So that was a lovely transition into Sparks. So, yeah. So it's wonderful. It's almost like you've done an interview before. So tell us how this came about. What was the genesis of actually this particular project? Sparks and Wiry Cries, by the way, the website VocalFam is sparksandwirycries.org.
Nice and straightforward.
Wiry, in case you're like me and an idiot in regards in spelling, is W-I-R-Y. So tell us how this came about, including why you named it that.
Yeah, we've had that question a lot.
Luckily, if you go to the website, like it does become clearer pretty quickly, just given what pops up.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so it's based off of the first line or the title of a poem by Paul Goodman that was set by Ned Roram, recently passed. But this is somebody who, an American composer who has written, I mean, hundreds of songs, and is probably best known for his song output. He has written opera and music and all sorts of stuff, but really his song repertoire kind of sticks out. And I think that it was this feeling that it actually the poem quite nicely encapsulates the way that we often think about two musicians, a singer and pianist. So what sparks and wiry cries shall I strike first upon the iron string, which is supposed to be, you know, sort of like a piano, and we are definitely trying to be buzzy, forward, wiry noisemakers, right, as singers. So that's the title. It started as a podcast. So,
well, then
we see you. But then I think our mission came together over years and years of refining things. And, I know Erica can speak beautifully to that. But it took a while to kind of find our way. And that, so if there's anybody contemplating any kind of entrepreneurial thing out there, just to know that slow and meandering and lots of like divergent paths does not mean necessarily that you won't be able to focus into something that can have some power behind it.
I love that. Well, I mean, it kind of speaks to what you were saying as far as getting into art song stuff. You got to do a lot of different things, and it all starts to come together.
So when you started, was the sort of like desire to have, obviously you two were collaborating together, you know, singer and pianist, doing performing recitals, you know, programs. Was there like a desire to, you know, with the podcast and then with some of the other things that now Sparks kind of inhabits a space of, was there a desire to specifically diversify that beyond just the performance of it, to lead to some kind of awareness of art song, awareness of composers, awareness of like what?
Yeah.
Yes, all of that. 100%. Well summarized. Thank you.
good.
Tell us about how you've gone about that, though. Like, I mean, through things like Song Slam and other things. Tell us some of those activities.
Sure. I mean, Martha, do you want me to jump in, or I can? I will just say that, you know, Martha is like a Pez dispenser of incredibly amazing ideas. It's remarkable. They're all very tasty, also, and And she, so she, you know, she was the one who called up and she like, let's start a podcast. And I was like, okay, what's a podcast? And so she explained that to me, and then we did that. And that was terrifying, by the way. I really, hats off to you guys for doing this. And we started experimenting, of course, pretty quickly after that with presenting concerts. And then I thought, well, it'd be really useful. You know, there was this like ongoing buzz in that moment. What was that, like 2009, Martha, I feel like, when we kept hearing this phrase over and over again, classical music is dying, or classical music is dead, or, you know, there's no more art song audience. And it was just extremely negative language. But it wasn't at all, I didn't see the evidence for it out in the world. In fact, I was seeing like, sure, it was never going to be like the thing that sold the most tickets, and it was never going to be in the biggest venues. It wasn't designed for that. It was never supposed to inhabit that space. Right. And it was actually, I think, putting it in those spaces sometimes is detrimental, right? And so I think we were kind of trying to say, no, like, hey, pay attention. And so we built a website with support from the Canada Council. We're both Canadian born. And we built this website, and one of the ideas was maybe we could list all of the concerts that are going on like around the country that are all recitals, just so that people can see, oh my God, like look at all of this, look at how much is going on and all the opportunities, right? So we grew the website, and then we thought it would be really wonderful to have these musicologists that we've met at various conferences like contribute bits of their writing and expertise about song, because gosh, when you understand what's happening in the song, like you hear it, it's so moving, like we want to share that. So basically we're just trying to invite everyone into our living room and have this conversation with us through the vehicle of Sparks. But over time, you know, the huge idea that Martha had was the Song Slam, and we talked about it for years before it happened, because it was sort of hard. It was something we'd hadn't experienced before. It was like trying to find the language to really describe what it is. And Martha should do that in just a second to kind of give the pitch, the elevator pitch on the Song Slam. But that idea ignited. It really did. It ignited something that, and it was addressing both our desire to connect people, but then we didn't understand how much we were going to get back from that experience, because the composers and the poets and the performers, like I've never seen so much gratitude come like at me, you know, and at us as an organization for just doing what we're excited about. And so we really understood then in that we were meeting a need that was out there, and that was creating a space for people to do something they had always wanted to do. So, yeah, but Martha,
so Martha, tell us what a Song Slam is.
Yeah.
So a Song Slam, I mean, it's sort of one event that we curate essentially every year in New York, but then we also have these partner events, or these we partner with other art song organizations or colleges around the world, really, to produce them in their local community. And it's really building off the idea that there is actually a really engaged community of music makers and audience members who are interested in this repertoire. So that was one of the reasons why we did it. The other was that we saw a need to kind of take away some of the gatekeepers. So I'll just give you the entire idea. The idea is that it's based around a poetry slam, as you might imagine, where we take teams of composer, singer, pianist, and sometimes poet, although we will often have poets that are in the public domain being set. And then this team has to come together around a world premiere of 5 minutes or less for voice and piano. And the sign up to take part in these events is always first come, first served. There is no barrier to entry, except that you have to be available and ready to do it at the time when the registration opens. In New York City, I think this last time it filled up in 9 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it depends on the on where you are and how big
you are.
Sure.
But it's really galvanized, and the level of musicianship that has come out of these has grown every single year. It's been incredibly exciting. And what happens is that each team then brings their claque to vote for them, because we have these world premieres of maybe between 10 and 14 songs, mm-hmm. And then the audience votes on their favorite, and we give out a small amount of monetary prize money. And the goal with that is not to give out huge amounts of money, but it's to keep it so that this remains a community event where people are coming together to not only just make music and show what they have to say, but also to interact with their colleagues, to get ideas about who's doing what. For us, it has been an incredible opportunity to see who is out there, who are doing exciting work, what's new, what kind of amazing poetry is being written right now that we don't know about, which composers are out there doing incredible work. And it has been a surprise and delight every single time.
I love
that. That's awesome. So like let's say I'm a composer, and can I come and use my own poetry?
Yeah.
Like I could do my own poetry and composition and maybe even play my own song.
That happens quite often, actually.
So
Art Song is built on this sort of equal marriage, right?
Right.
Of poetry, music, pianist, singer, right? It's that kind of sacred quartet that Art Song embodies. And so we definitely, we want to encourage musicians to keep their team actually as big as possible.
Sure.
Because that's where often the magic happens. And if you are somebody that is incredibly trained as a poet, then that's a great idea to set that kind of music, if that's something like an equal love for you. But I will also say that if you're writing poetry as a way to sort of like keep the funds to a smaller amount of money if you win, often the writing, the composition is only so good as the words that are being set.
Yeah.
And so I think we've seen a bit of a trend in that. I think I can say that without feeling strange about it or awkward about it.
There's always variety within each song. It's not juried, right? So we don't preview the scores. There has to be a score. We do check that the score is complete by a certain date, but we don't jury the scores. So it's very open in that way. So of course there's diversity, right? We're not looking for a particular kind of voice. We're not looking for a particular style of writing. And so there's just range, but I have to say year after year and increasingly so, like it feels like the level just gets stronger and stronger and increasingly diverse. But Martha's right. I mean, I think, teamwork, makes us all better, and we feel the energy around the song when that team spirit is there. But we had a prize-winning team with a really strong song a couple of years ago where the pianist was the composer and the singer was the poet, and it was tremendous. That's the whole point, is that we don't know until we're there and experiencing it.
Have you done any of these, I know we did one at the National Conference 2 years ago with Nats. Mm-hmm. Have you done any of these specifically like hosted at universities, or has it always just been in a city?
Definitely. This season we had one at Indiana University. We've had University of Toronto. We had down in Tallahassee. It was partnered with what's the school?
UFC? Florida, is it Florida,
Florida State?
State?
Florida State's in Tallahassee.
So the answer is most definitely.
Well, I mean, it just seems to me with my new job that we need to do one of these in Boulder.
Just putting that out there.
I'm just putting that out there. It's a lovely place to visit. and so we should definitely somehow organize one of these at CU. One of the things that I loved when you did it at the National Conference was like feeling like as an audience member that I had like buy-in with yeah. the like voting.
Sure.
You know, that was very, which made me both, here's what I loved about it as an audience member, and just, it made me want to put my phone away.
Yeah.
And I'm being really honest.
Wow.
Like it made me want to put my phone away and really engage with the text, with the music, with the performance, and what was happening, rather than, you know, owning into my own habitual, you know, distractions.
Well, I think it invites you in sort of as a collaborator as well, and also like on that level, because I think sometimes like as an audience, particularly if you're just someone coming into the audience as just a music lover, you can feel maybe not, I don't want to say looked down upon, that might be a little too pejorative or whatever, but you feel like, oh, they're doing this really high art and I'm just here listening. Maybe you don't understand it. But if you're being asked to say like, well, what do you think is about, like, your opinion matters. You are the critic in this situation. So I think it is very engaging from an audience perspective.
And in some ways, it's not even like the idea of critic, right, has sometimes become a negative.
Sure, yeah.
It's like, but just giving ownership and actually, honestly, just recognizing that the audience is who's driving.
Yeah.
Well, is kind of the fifth partner, right? You talked about the partner, the equal partners of the poetry, the music, the pianist and the singer. I mean, really, you know, particularly in an intimate setting, which most of this stuff was made for, like that audience is kind of the fifth partner, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of beautiful. I mean, you know, because I've always wanted to do, I've never gotten around to it, but like I've always wanted to do like a song recital just in somebody's home.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never done it, but like I've always wanted to do it.
That's where this is a totally achievable goal. You can make it happen.
Well, sure.
That's true. I think you have friends with homes.
Well,
and pianos.
And I have my own grand piano. Yeah. My own baby grand piano.
You have your own home.
That's true. But it's just been always something I've just wanted to do and never, you know, gotten around to. Talk a little bit about what the two of you have kind of either learned or experience that you were maybe surprised by in inviting all these people to these events that maybe has inspired your own music making or your own creativity or collaboration?
It's endless. I mean, and in the same way that teaching is like teaching is the best teacher to yourself.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Every single project that we curate on a bigger scale, every song slam, every email exchange, we have this incredible administrative team that helps us do what we do, and they are constantly teaching us. And I don't even know where to begin with that, because that's actually, maybe that is the biggest joy.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, I also see on your website, you have Art Song Magazine. Are you still actively producing that?
I would say it's intermittent. Our growth has always been extremely organic. And so, and I, that is code for, we do what we can.
Oh yeah. We understand that. Too. That's, yeah.
Yeah, and that has made it sustainable, right? So we have developed a sense of, you know, spaciousness around the elements that, you know, are not at the focal point in that given moment. And recently, you know, we've been really, I would say, like engaged in getting some important shows that we commissioned out into the world. Mm. And we've been thinking a lot about, you know, making space for the curation of events that are representative of styles of music with which Martha and I personally have no history or cultural connection. And so our energy has just been kind of over in that arena. But we do have a kind of annual budget for inviting writers in to make contributions. So we try to, you know, keep it going just on a very every couple of months kind of basis, but it, maybe we're not even that frequent occasionally.
Sure.
But give us time.
Yeah. Hey, listen, there have been months where we haven't produced any podcasts, and we're supposed to be doing this every week.
Every week.
So we understand that completely.
Life happens.
Have the two of you taken songs that you've heard at the song slams and then incorporated them into your own repertoire when you all recital?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Please go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, one of the other things that's been a kind of natural outgrowth of, at least of the New York Song Slam, is that we also give a commission prize for the following year. So, and it's not necessarily the prize winners, although it sometimes has coincided. But it, meaning the audience prize winner.
Yeah.
And so within the context of that, some we've certainly taken the show on the road.
I love that.
Has there been, I feel like we talked about this in Chicago, and forgive me, has there been now a publication of any of the winners of Song Slams? Where can folks find that?
New Music Shelf has been a terrific partner. They published the first volume of Song Slam songs that, so we curated, how many are in there, Martha? 15?
Yeah.
Something like that. And actually next week we have a meeting to select another group for the second volume. So that's something that we're working on. So you can find them there, New Music Shelf. And we also have a partnership with EC Shermer to publish some of our commissioned songs. So you can look through their catalog, and there's an art song series with our name on it, Sparks and Wiry Cries.
Nice.
And that's also hopefully going to grow over the next couple of years as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Very good.
That's awesome.
Very good. Very good. Is New Music Shelf, is that their website, just New Music Shelf? Okay.
Pretty sure, yeah.
Great. So definitely look out for that, Vocal Fam. That's an addition that, if, particularly if you're looking at programming for your students or yourself, or you know, you're looking for
just things that are different, new.
You know, not doing Gretchen again. Not there's anything
not
wrong.
There's
with
anything
that,
wrong with that.
But you know, there are more. You know, actually, Schubert wrote more songs than that, as it turns out.
But you never know what might speak to your students.
It is a good one. I think it's not. Instead of Gretchen, it's Gretchen and. Right?
Sure, I agree. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. It absolutely is one of what, absolutely fantastic. Okay, so sparksandwirycries.org is the website.
Mm-hmm.
You can find either of them, I'm sure, also on their faculty web pages at either Ithaca or Bard.
You also both have beautiful just web pages of your own.
Or on their own websites.
They're right at the top of your Google search, so good job.
Well done.
I didn't have to search for that at all.
Must be lined up. Well done. Well done.
Not that many Martha Goots.
That probably does help, admittedly.
Indeed. Okay, so as we transition a little bit, so other than music, just so you can share with the Vocal Fam that you actually are humans, and you know, because we musicians are usually so busy that sometimes literally we have no time for anything else at all. Give us one thing that brings each of you joy outside of just singing and making music or playing piano.
We have wicked card game rivalries in our family.
Oh.
So almost every night we are, and maybe that's dorky, but
I love it.
Every night my husband and son and I are off playing Uno Attack, or like.
I love Uno Attack.
It's so good. And
yeah.
We have house rules that come into play, which is.
Oh.
You get a little.
Keeps it interesting. I like it.
Yeah, we have to be careful with that when we do play a game like that, about making house rules.
Uh-huh.
That gets real. I have a couple of real rule followers.
Yes,
in
you
my
do.
Family, so that gets a little dangerous if we do. Something.
You really do. So, I was gonna say, I can't imagine if you tried to introduce them to Cheater's Monopoly.
Oh well, I usually do cheat when we're playing Monopoly. But
that's dreadful.
Anyway.
Worst kind of person. Okay. I also like rules, so.
I can't do Monopoly, actually. I get too angry. It's not okay.
It's the truth. Erica, what about you?
Well, I'm having trouble picking, but I've been trying to like build up that space in my life in the last couple of years, like decidedly, you know, take better care of myself. Cause you're right. We do sometimes end up in the practice room a little too much.
Seriously.
And that's not balance, you know? So, you know, my pop culture reference, I'm a total diehard Trekkie. If I need to decompress, I watch the Star Trek. I watch all the Star Trek. I'm extremely excited that Discovery is just starting again for its final season. But that's where I'm at. And that led to one of our main hashtags. I'm gesturing towards my whiteboard right now, in case you're wondering about that, where it says live, song, and prosper.
Oh, this is fantastic. This is fantastic. Well, yeah. I will confess that I also, we both watch Trek. Mm-hmm. Sarah was like, my wife was kind of forced into watching Trek when
I was, but I enjoy it now.
When because both her husband and myself were both big Next Gen fans, yeah. And when Picard came back and then was terrible and then got better,
it got better.
But
Discovery was great. Strange New Worlds is my jam.
Strange New Worlds is so good.
Lower Decks, I'm here for it.
But so what's your favorite Trek? I have to know.
Oh, I mean, okay, so Strange New Worlds, I was kind of blown away, I have to say. Like,
it's
the way
incredible.
They're doing the storytelling, I find it so moving. I'm always in tears. It's just amazing. So I think that's probably up at the top. But I have been rewatching, as one does, all of Voyager, and so good.
It's better than you remember it being.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, DS9 is my top.
Deep
Space Nine is the final five seasons of DS9 are just I grew up on Next Gen. I mean, you know, that was my childhood.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, you know, Jean-Luc Picard was my space dad.
But there are worse space dads to have. Yeah.
But but Strange New Worlds. I have not started Discovery 5, season 5.
Yeah.
But which I understand is gonna tie up a loose thread from Next Gen. So I'm looking forward to watching that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was a little bit disappointed in Discovery season 4, pretty hard.
Yeah.
We were too.
So, but my wife and I are just not in a mental place where we can expose ourselves to anything new.
To new? I get there's a place for comfort shows.
Yeah. But anyway, that's wonderful.
We love it.
Live long and prosper, indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Sarah, what'd you have for breakfast?
This morning, in addition to the protein thingy I've been having, I had a muffin, because some mornings you just need a...
With chocolate chips?
It might have been a double chocolate chip muffin,
because
it was a celebration of sleep.
There you go.
Celebration of sleep.
Yeah.
Okay, Vocal Fam, we will continue to finish out season 7 here the rest of this month and maybe into May a little bit. I know we're going to come back next week because I want to do
you
that
wanna
episode
talk.
I was talking about.
Yes.
We'll
be here next week.
Yeah, come back next week. We're going to talk about...
Just for us.
We're going to talk about some treble resonance strategies.
The middle mixing, yeah.
Yeah.
Always exciting.
That we're playing with. But Erica, Martha, thank you so much for carving out time for us this week. We appreciate it so much.
To talk some song.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Thanks for chatting with us.
Oh,
it was not an interview. You were right. It was just a conversation.
It really is.
We don't do interviews. This is 7 years of not doing interviews now.
No.
And listen, Sarah.
Yes.
With this next month, we've now broken the community curse.
Well, thank heavens.
Instead of it being 6 seasons in a movie, we have finished 7 seasons.
We're just here.
Wow.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
We did it.
Yeah. No sign.
Did this year try to get us? Yes.
Yes.
But
has it?
No.
Anyway, thank you both so much.
It
was absolutely fantastic. All right, Vocal Fam, we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Peace.
Peace.